The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have a lot to get to on today's program. Coming up, hopefully, later on in the show, we'll get through some listener and reader feedback that we've been getting in response to these programs and also to the daily email blast that we send out, the Trumpet Brief. If you haven't yet subscribed to the Daily Trumpet Brief, you can do so at the newly designed trumpet.com, the website, thetrumpet.com. Later on in this segment, I'm going to go through a national review piece. We're 100 years on from the Russian Revolution. In fact, this is a week of anniversaries. The Balfour Declaration also, we're coming up to the anniversary, the 100-year anniversary of that. Hopefully I can spend some more time on that subject on Thursday's program. But this one on the Russian Revolution is eye-opening for sure. We'll get to that in just a moment. And also later in the show, I've been talking to the students here since getting back from the Feast of Tabernacles, telling them in a forum last week, and I'm going to build on it again today, later on this afternoon, telling them or admonishing them to keep that feast vision alive and well in their minds, even as they go through the rest of this school year, to not let it be something they meditate on while only at the feast, but that we, like the Bible says, that we seek first that coming kingdom in everything that we do and think. So we'll get into that more in the next segment. A few news items, just following on some things that we've talked about even here recently. A report here on how U.S. troops need to remain in the Middle East following the collapse of ISIS in order to, as the Washington Free Beacon puts it, to block the Iran land bridge. We had a program last Friday about the collapse of ISIS and how that for 3-4 years now, it's just been a distraction. It's distracted the world away from Iran. And now with ISIS out of the way, the U.S. has pushed ISIS out of the way. It's Iran that's rapidly advancing across the region in Iraq and Syria and so on. And this story here says that, well, I'll just quote a bit from it. Natalie Johnson writes, "The United States needs to maintain a military presence in the Middle East after the battle against the Islamic State to block Iran's attempt to carve out a land corridor connecting Tehran to the Mediterranean." And here again, we've had a lot to say about this corridor, this bridge at thetrumpet.com. It says here, "Iran has been racing against U.S.-backed forces to establish areas of influence across Iraq and Syria to hold communication lines and more easily move its forces, including the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, Hezbollah, and other Shia militias in the region." It says the so-called land bridge would leverage Iranian power in the region and give its troops maximum battlefield flexibility and diversified supply routes. So there's that. And then, of course, the fact that Iran is also racing to build a nuclear bomb. I mean, like my father said in that program we had Friday, the clip we played, it's like comparing a little mouse, ISIS, to a tiger that is Iran. You go back and listen to that program, by the way. We also pulled some of that material together, I think, for Friday's Trumpet Brief. So plenty to review. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that one, it has quite a few clips from my father's Key of David program. That's on Friday's show. So you can look for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show box somewhere in the new design on thetrumpet.com and get to that ISIS distraction program. You may have heard also yesterday how a U.S. court blocks President Trump's military transgender ban. So here you have a president trying to do something that it would just be common sense in any other generation. And yet a court rushes to the defense of the transgenders, blocking Donald Trump's ban on transgender personnel serving in the U.S. military. We need, in the view of this judge, and I'm sure plenty of others, we need transgenders in the Army. We need them in the U.S. military. That's the thinking in today's world. Pretty amazing. We had a little spiel on that. Just the NHS. We're going to put that on the Trumpet site as well. A little bit of a follow-up from yesterday's program, just about the crazy procedures in the NHS for young people coming into the system, saying that they're trapped in the wrong body, and then they promptly move them right into transgender clinics to the tune of about 50 per week right here in the UK. Crazy. Upside down, for sure. 2 Timothy 3, being fulfilled. It's just getting worse and worse. Angela Merkel and the CDU struggle to form the Jamaica Coalition. That's from the Deutsche Welle. Of course, we've had so much to say over the last month or so about the German elections. And if you remember following those shocking results, following that earth-shaking election, we mentioned or talked about how difficult it would be for Ms. Merkel to just pull together a coalition. It says here, four German political parties, the Christian Democrats, Christian Social Union, Free Democrats, and Greens, are now in their third week of talks to form a government. They disagree about more things than they agree on. Richard Palmer was telling me that Brad McDonald's putting together a short blog post on this very subject as well. So you can look for that at thetrumpet.com. Also, but to continue here from Deutsche Welle, it says Monday, over a month after Germany's election, so we're a month removed from it, marked the beginning of the third week of exploratory talks on the makeup of what would be Angela Merkel's fourth coalition government. It says later on, these talks are the informal precursor to the official coalition negotiations. In other words, as the chancellor and many other leading politicians had predicted, there is still a long way to go before she can sit at a table with her new cabinet and sign a coalition contract. Meanwhile, as I covered yesterday on the program, you have the rise of all of these authoritarians all around the world. And Germany's dragging its feet, but that will soon change. As we know, Bible prophecy says that it will. Daniel 8, and of course a number of other biblical passages come to mind. But that's something that we're following closely. Even Ms. Merkel, as she tries to put this coalition together, we're gonna be watching closely what happens in Germany. Even as you see already, other strong kings, as the Bible calls them, beginning to emerge in Europe. One other story here that I think is worth drawing attention to as well. This is from the Asia Times this morning, how that President Trump must tread carefully with his Asian bankers. It says, as Donald Trump angles to make America's debt burden great again, he has some finessing to do with his bankers. No, not Russia in this case, but China and Japan, both by far the biggest holders of U.S. treasuries, with a combined $2.3 trillion. $2.3 trillion. Some of you might remember Tim Thompson talking a couple decades ago about China and Japan holding us over the barrel. $2.3 trillion of American debt. South Korea's $95 billion. $95 billion. Also has folks in Seoul curious about President Trump adding at least $1.5 trillion of debt for giant tax cuts America doesn't need. That's according to the Asia Times. But it bring, you know, and obviously there's a lot of Americans that disagree with that. They think that they need tax cuts or that they need tax breaks. But as we often point out, I mean, where are we going to get the money for all of this? When will we finally run out of money or run out of debt to run up? When will nations stop financing America's debt? That's coming. That's coming, and soon. Well, this National Review piece, as I said, it's a real eye-opener. The Russian Revolution, 100 years on, its enduring allure and menace. This is by Douglas Murray, and we'll have to try to link to this at thetrumpet.com. So it's a pretty long piece. I just want to read a few excerpts here. But it really does highlight just the gross ignorance that you see in education. But it's not just young people that are ignorant of all these crimes of communism. It's leading politicians as well, or politicians that just turn a blind eye to it and say that, well, I mean, there were good things that communism has accomplished as well. But as for Russians themselves, this is Douglas Murray. He says, in June, Russians were asked in an opinion poll to name the top 10 outstanding people of all time and all nations. This, according to, you know, the Russian people, and I guess quote all of this here, but Vladimir Putin there was second, along with a famous Russian poet. But first on the list is Joseph Stalin. Some 38% put him in as number one. Stalin, who is responsible for the deaths of around 20 million people, just by most moderate estimates, according to this article. And yet he's still leading the greatest figure of all time in the minds of a majority of Russians. It says, were the greatest mass murderer in Russian history able to return from his grave today, he could resume power without even needing to fix the ballot. I mean, if Stalin was here today, he'd be Russia's leader. He's that popular. It says, of course, if Adolf Hitler remained the most popular figure in modern Germany, the world would be worried. But with the communists, it was always different. It's always different, you see. What is it about the West's infatuation with communism? It says here, last year, the research firm Servation conducted a poll to ascertain the attitudes of young British people in the 16 to 24 age bracket. The oldest among this group would have been born in the year the Soviet Union collapsed, the youngest around a decade after the fall of the Berlin Wall. The respondents were asked to look at a list of names and to say which ones they most associated with crimes against humanity. So here's a simple test for them to take. Here's a list of names. Which ones are most associated with crimes against humanity? It says here Adolf Hitler finished first, with 87% of young people seeing him in a negative light. Much further down, below Saddam Hussein, comes Joseph Stalin, whom 61% of young people associated with such crimes, with 28% of all respondents admitting that they had never heard of him. Half of young people admitted they had never heard of Lenin. And while 8% were ignorant of Adolf Hitler and therefore clearly as ignorant as swans, it is what happened farther down the name recognition list that was more alarming. It says fully 39% of young people associated George W. Bush with crimes against humanity, and 34% associated Tony Blair with the same. 39% and 34%, which were higher percentages than for either Mao Zedong or Pol Pot. The cause is not fellow traveling, but sheer ignorance. No less than 70% of young people said they had never heard of Chairman Mao, while 72% had never heard of the Cambodian genocide. So that's among young people today. But as this article goes on to point out, I mean, you have, when Castro died, for example, you have the leader in Canada, Trudeau, talking about how great he was. Diane Abbott, she's another politician here in the UK, a prominent one at that. Of course, you know about Jeremy Corbyn, but Diane Abbott, who had nice things to say about Mao, saying that for the most part, you know, he was a pretty good leader, responsible for 60-some million deaths, but a good leader in the minds of some of our Western elites. This piece, Douglas Murray, let me just get to the conclusion here. He says, what are the consequences of societies with so little memory of 20 million deaths in the USSR or 65 million deaths caused by efforts to instill communism in China? If those 65 million Chinese deaths cannot detain us, what are the chances that anyone will care about the 2 million deaths in Cambodia, the million in Eastern Europe, the million in Vietnam, the 2 million and counting in North Korea, the nearly 2 million across Africa, the 1.5 million in Afghanistan, the 150,000 in Latin America, not to mention the thousands of murders committed by communist movements not in power, a number that could almost seem meager compared with the official slaughter. It says here, who could survey this wreckage? 100 million deaths in a century alone and not recoil? Who would stand on top of these 100 million tragedies and think, once more, comrades, though this time with subtly different emphasis, let's give it another shot. Let's give it one more try. He says, finally, the question lingers still, not just in Russia, Cuba, and Venezuela, but now again in the West. How come we are still watching this attempt to make this horrible, bloody recipe, which aims for utopia, yet always leaves the same catastrophic, bloody mess? How can we keep making the same mistakes over and over again? Well, history repeats itself. And we know from Bible prophecy, I mean, we're in for a repeat, and it's going to be far worse. That's Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22. Far worse than even World Wars 1 and 2 combined. Which is why we really do have to, when we know the truth, this is why we really have to keep our minds focused on the future, as I'll discuss further coming up here in the next segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
You know, we live in a world that is
an unbelievable paradox. We're in a world of awesome progress, awesome accomplishment in this 20th century especially, and yet a world of appalling evils. And I think that never before in world history has the world been in so much trouble and has it been plagued with so many evils as it is right now. Almost nobody is contented or happy today. Everybody is out to get all we can get. People are interested only in the physical things that don't make them happy and that don't bring contentment. And they don't know why they're unhappy. They don't know what is wrong. Half of the world is illiterate. Half of the world is living in abject poverty, filth and squalor. And yet some of the world is living too rich with so much that it makes them unhappy. It's a terrible paradox.
That's Herbert Armstrong from one of his old radio TV programs, I think, actually, talking about a subject there that he spoke about often. He wrote about it at length, this, as he said, this terrible paradox, this world where there's just so many troubles and problems. All of this advancement in technology advancement in travel and a sophisticated world, a very modern world, and yet a world full of evil. So many people suffering in so many other parts of the world. I mean, suffering like literally in the poverty-stricken sense. Just one more clip here from, again, this is a television program from the late 70s or early 80s. This is clip one.
Why were so many millions of people born over in, well, countries like Bangladesh and some parts of India and other parts of Asia, Africa, where so many people are practically starving to death, some literally starving to death, and where there are millions that are poverty-stricken, they're illiterate, they're living in filth and squalor. They seem to have nothing to look forward to. What do you have to look forward to? What is life all about? Why did you come into this life? What is it? What lies ahead? Most people don't know.
They certainly don't. Most people don't know why we're here. And most who do have some bit of prosperity physically, they don't even think about those other parts of the world, like he mentioned, in India, in Asia, in Africa, where people are starving to death, where there are millions living in poverty, millions of young people who are illiterate. And then you look at the spiritual illiteracy, or even as I covered in the previous segment, I mean, here are young people in Britain that can read, but look at what they're being taught. Look at how little they know about their own history. Why are we here? And what should we be setting our minds on? What a contrast when you look at this world and all of the filth and the squalor and all of the trouble. And when you compare it to the world, that's coming. We observed the Feast of Tabernacles, as I mentioned, last week or the week before in Tweed Heads, Australia, and then in Clark, Philippines, and both sites were just beautiful areas. And, of course, most of the time when you go to the feast, you spend with brethren, and so that makes it beautiful and uplifting as well. But you don't have to go very far away from those feast sites to get into the big cities, Brisbane or Sydney in the case of Australia, or in the case of the Philippines in Manila. I mentioned previously that we were stuck for a few days in Manila after the Feast of Tabernacles observance. And what a contrast just that was, after having this beautiful feast with so many wonderful people in Clark, and then to be stuck outside of a big airport in a huge city of millions and millions of people where there's just so much congestion and noise, and of course, a lot of people even in the city of Manila living in poverty, dumping their waste or their garbage out in the middle of the street, squatting, as they call them, living in shacks. And, of course, in a big city, any big city, you don't see much vegetation. There's lots of pollution. What a contrast. I mean, as I told the students last week, it was quite a contrast even when getting back to Edstone, because it's so beautiful and peaceful and millennial here. Mr. Armstrong wrote once that, you know, when he traveled the world, whether he was in the poorest parts of China or Egypt or other parts of Africa, that he often thought about the wonderful world tomorrow, the joyous world that's coming. He thought about a world without poverty and filth, a world without starvation and malnutrition. Just imagine a world without senseless acts of violence and war, a world without terrorism, a world where there are no armaments of war, a world without deranged lunatics presiding over weapons of mass destruction. There's quite a few of those in the world, those kinds of weapons, and there's quite a few dangerous lunatics as well. But can you picture a world without violence, a world without hatred, a world without division along political or religious, social or racial lines? Can you imagine a world without politics, without these political factions fighting each other? Can you imagine a world without investigations into corruption? Think about a world without all kinds of sexual deviance, a world without family breakdown, without juvenile delinquency. Imagine a world in which families are strong and the fathers are lovingly leading the families. Imagine a world without Satan's influence. Imagine a world without Satan or his demons roaming the four corners of the earth. Imagine a world without demonic possession or harassment. Yesterday I mentioned that story about the poor young people that are getting into the NHS system and then sent to the transgender clinics. But as that article brought out, I mean, parents are taking so many of their young people to the NHS because they're troubled. They're mentally unstable. Imagine a world without mental instability. A world without demonic harassment. Well, that world is coming. It is coming. It'll be here, hopefully, in just a few short years. We'll be living in a world without division and strife. A world without poverty. A world without hatred and prejudice. A world without vanity and pride, a world in which everyone, every human being, will be living according to the supreme law of love, godly love. My father, at the Feast of Tabernacles this past year, he said on the opening night that we really need this world tomorrow vision. We need the feast vision because this world is going dark. This world is in trouble. Mr. Armstrong, as I said, he looked at the indescribable suffering of the world and he thought of the joyous world tomorrow that is coming. He says further, this is from an old article, how can abundant well-being be brought to these teeming, impoverished millions? He said the answer, correct the cause. Lack of right education. It'll require right education available to all to correct all the world's ills. He said very soon, today's decadent education will be replaced by the educational system of the world tomorrow. This already has been introduced in Ambassador College. And like the proverbial grain of mustard seed, it's already beginning to spread around the world. What a blessing those educational institutions were. What a vision what a vision there was at Ambassador College during its heyday, whether at Pasadena or over in Big Sandy, Texas, or at the Brickett Wood campus. Well, those colleges have since closed their doors, but the vision continues. The education with vision continues at Armstrong College. It's just the beginning. What happened in Edmond, Oklahoma in the fall of 2001. The smallest of beginnings, the mustard seed beginning. Just 8 students. And that has grown and expanded over the years. And now there's a smaller campus or a small campus in Edstone as well. Beautiful, uplifting environment. Let's go through a few verses. Speaking of environment, let's go through a few verses here in Ezekiel chapter 28 and look at the environment that Lucifer was brought up in and then the environment that he was placed in. Ezekiel 28. And we'll start here in verse 12. It says, "Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus and say unto him, thus says the eternal God, you seal up the sum full of wisdom and perfect in beauty." This is referring to the great archangel Lucifer, this masterpiece of God's creation. It says, "You have been in Eden, the garden of God." God created this being. God trained this being at his heavenly throne, and then he assigned this Lucifer, here to this earth, in Eden, it says, the garden of God. Lucifer had a history in Eden, the garden of God. He put him there. It says, every precious stone was your covering. He mentions all of this beauty, this beautiful environment. And then later in verse 14, it says, "You are the anointed cherub that covers, and I have set you so. You are upon the holy mountain of God. You have walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire." So he was one of 2 anointed cherubs whose wings covered the throne of God. Think of the knowledge and the training and the understanding that he had. And then, as I say, he's assigned to this earth to come here and to practice the law of love in action, to beautify. I mean, then the earth was to just be the staging ground for work to be done all across the universe. But it says here in this passage, verse 15, "You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created until iniquity was found in you." So God found lawlessness in this being. Lucifer rebelled against his maker, his creator. He broke his covenant with God, and destruction set in. Verse 16, "By the multitude of your merchandise, they have filled the midst of you with violence, and you have sinned," it says. "Therefore, I will cast you as profane out of the mountain of God. I will destroy you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire." I mean, he used to cover God's great majestic throne, but he was corrupted. He was corrupted because of sin or iniquity. Verse 17 says, "Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You have corrupted your wisdom by reason of your brightness. I will cast you to the ground and will lay you before kings that they may behold you." So he became Satan the devil when he rebelled against God's law, when he rebelled against God's love. Now let's look at the Garden of Eden account in the book of Genesis. Look at Genesis in chapter 2. Notice what it says here about Adam and Eve. Verse 8, "And the eternal God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed." So he placed man in the Garden of Eden, just like he had placed Lucifer in the Garden of Eden. God put him in a specific location. Why? What was it about this location? Well, verse 15, just to hit the high spots here, it says, "And the eternal God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it." So God placed him in right in the middle of this beautiful garden, this uplifting environment, and he said to Adam, "You dress it and keep it." Or in other words, go to work. serve God, beautify this environment, make it uplifting and wholesome and healthy and productive and fruitful. And that was his job, given by God, to manage the environment, to beautify, to maintain. Mr. Armstrong likened this state of creation or recreation in the case of the Genesis account to like an unfinished piece of furniture that man could then go and beautify and use that creative power that God gave to us. But again, well, the same thing happened. Once iniquity was found in Adam and Eve, then look at what man has been doing with this environment ever since. But as it was in the original Garden of Eden, or in the garden that God placed Adam and Eve in, I mean, here was this beautiful, beautiful prototype, you could say, this model environment in which Adam and Eve could work and at the same time learn and grow in. They could experience the beauty of God's creation on a daily basis. And as the human race expanded, they could take that little prototype, that little model out into the four corners of the earth to spread out this beauty, this productivity. My father wrote this in his booklet on Ezekiel. He said, God is always trying to get angels and men to create Eden, the garden of God. That's what we're here to create and what we will be creating in the world tomorrow. Satan tried to destroy that garden of God, but wasn't able to. He was able to conquer Adam and Eve because they hadn't kept that garden of Eden as the garden of God. God gives us a little bit of property. He wants to see if we'll be faithful in the least, like it says in the Gospel of Luke, before he then hands over everything to us. He wants us to beautify, to dress, to keep. So you think about the vision that there is just in a campus, a godly campus, God's educational system. It says further in the Ezekiel booklet, today God is giving us some land to create a garden of God. He wants to see us create that garden and conquer Satan in the process. Something at which the first Adam failed and the second Adam, Jesus Christ, succeeded. Pretty amazing statement. That's right out of the Ezekiel booklet, Ezekiel the end time prophet. But this is how God works. He starts small. He wants us to create a Garden of Eden and conquer Satan in the process and then replicate this way and spread it over the earth. And of course, this is how God's way of life is going to spread in the world tomorrow. It's like Mr. Armstrong said in that quote I gave at the top. It's already started, God's way of life, this Garden of Eden utopia. It's starting on these small campuses. And it will soon spread. It says here again in the Ezekiel booklet, you can, if you're reading along, you can start turning over to 2 Peter 3 and verse 8. But my father says further in Ezekiel, it only makes sense that he is very concerned about our character development, so he gives his people charge over certain things. College campuses, acreage, a global work. He wants to see how we will handle these responsibilities because he never wants to risk having another Tohu and Bohu, a wasted and desolate earth, as is described in Genesis 1 and verse 2. See, that's what Satan's rebellion brought to this earth and to the universe. A state of waste and decay. Tohu and bohu are the Hebrew words. And he doesn't want to see that happen again. So he's giving us a little tiny bit to work with. But that will spread. If we have the vision, if we have our minds on the future, this verse in 2 Peter 3 and verse 8, it says, but beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. Don't let this fact escape you. I mean, think about this world and the universe. Think about this life in the way that God does. Get the godly perspective. My father writes in the Epistles of Peter booklet, he says, our destiny is to become members of his family, God's family. So God wants our minds oriented toward eternity. That's what this verse is saying. I mean, with God, 1,000 years, it's just like a day. God wants our minds to be oriented toward eternity. But eternity is a towering concept. And so Peter tries to break it down for us. It says, we are preparing first of all, for 1,000-year millennium, 1,000 years of rest, a Sabbath rest from Satan's ways, from the way of sin. We're preparing for that. It says, after that, we will begin the process of spreading God's government out into the universe and eternity. My father says, this is a universe-sized concept. We must not live in the present. We must live in the future as God does. God inhabits eternity. God wants us to live in the future. I mean, here we are in the flesh, and we're so limited. We're limited by time and space, and yet we're about to occupy eternity. That's what God is offering to his family. It's a universe-sized concept. But you can see why we have to live in the future, as I was telling the students just last week. I mean, here they're brought to these beautiful campuses, so privileged to study God's way of life on either one, whether it's at headquarters or Edstone, and how that... I mean, what an environment this is to continue living in the future. This small college, God's college, it's a vision of hope. It's a prototype. It's the model that will be used tomorrow. My father brings this out in the God Family Vision. He says, why build those colleges throughout history if men were only going to turn away from them? Because that is not the way it will happen very soon. In the world tomorrow, God will establish those colleges all around the world, many thousands of them. And the first fruits will lead those colleges as they declare the Father and this God family vision. It says, then God's knowledge, this vision, will cover the earth as the waters fill the ocean beds. It will soon spread. You can see that prophecy, by the way, over in Isaiah 11 and verse 9. Picture that time. It's coming. It's now just ahead of us. And given the darkness that's setting in over all the earth, I mean, now, it's as important now as it ever has been to really keep our minds fixed on the future, or as my father said in that Epistles of Peter booklet, to live in the future. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with some feedback coming from you listeners. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advanced news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure.
This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Some responses that have come in over the last week in particular to the programs, to the trumpet briefs that have gone out. This one here in response to, I believe it was last Monday's show, Germany and the Ten Kings. It says here, it looks like they chopped the head off the Ten Commandments. That was in response to the story, that YouGov poll here in the UK, saying that a majority of Brits believe that four of the Ten Commandments are unnecessary. It says, you and the trumpet writers are doing an excellent, excellent job, and I really thank God for you. We sure can see the Ten Kings assembling. And then it says, finally, hope your wife is much better after the feast, as we've been praying for her. Well, she is, by the way, feeling a lot better, just doing what she can now to try to regain some weight after being so sick there for a week or so. In any event, she's feeling a lot better and back in action here around Edstone. This in response to the turning point in German politics. This was my father's trumpet brief from October 19th. It says here, have been watching Gutenberg for some time since you first mentioned him. Also reading your booklet on Winston Churchill. It all seems to be on the horizon and getting closer. When are we going to wake up? It's like the calm before the storm. Another one here says, it's frightening how much of prophecy is being completed at such a fast rate. As scary as it is, I'm glad this world ruled by man is about to end. Another one here coming from India. It says, your analysis, based on Bible prophecies about the coming rise of Germany and the decline of America, is very striking. I'm a student of the Word of God and would like to gain more knowledge about the future events foretold in the Bible. Thank you very much for your above article. Please enroll me in the Trumpet magazine, or subscribe me to the Trumpet magazine. Another one here in response to the Trumpet brief, I believe from this would be a week and a half ago, on God's love for humanity. Thanks so much for serving us here in the Philippines, especially during the feast. That brief, by the way, I talked about being in the Philippines and the work that Herbert Armstrong did in the Philippines, and how it was all a demonstration of just how much God loves this world. But it says here, it was awesome to have you in the Philippines, like having the Trumpet Daily live. We miss you and your family. We are looking forward to having you again and your father next year. And it is true, hopefully, well, I shouldn't say it emphatically, but my father's hoping to work his way over to the Philippines sometime next year. This one here says, thank you for choosing such an excellent example to show God's love for all humanity. It was beautifully done. It drove home even more the impact of the millennium and more importantly, the last great day. You wove your example of the people in the Philippines and the people all over the world into this last feast powerfully. That's from Denver, Colorado. Another one here says, thank you for this brief. I always marveled and also wondered at the special place the Philippines had in God's work at the time of Mr. Armstrong. And there is still a large number of the PCG members in that country. Now I understand better. Another one here in response to Austria and the Ten Kings. That was the program from a week ago on Monday, I believe it was. keep the awakening and eye-opening news coming so I can keep my armor on and keep praying. It says further, or actually this is another one, it says, thank you so very much for your latest brief. I've no doubt Austria will be in the final 10. It seems like it will take at least several more years to get pared down to that figure, but I read in either the Plain Truth or the Good News some 25 years ago that things would start to move very fast at the end time. It says, though I didn't vote for Donald Trump, if his election is indeed the catalyst for bringing about end time events, I will thank God, and you are the first entity to whom I've ever told that. So there you go. Another one here in response to how to win elections in today's world. That's from October 24th. I believe that was one sent by Richard Palmer. It says here, thank you once again for putting into an understandable yet short format not only what is happening in the world, but how it interrelates. I can see events happening in the world, but I cannot always put the importance of what is happening together. I like how you stated, with a bit of humor and much truth, that when someone starts lobbing missiles over your house, you don't much care about their morals or anything else. For thousands of years, starving people have followed any person that says they will feed them. Thank you again for adding to my understanding of what is happening in the world today. Another one says, great informative brief. I read all your magazines and literature from thetrumpet.com. And then these last two here are in response to Brad McDonald's trumpet brief from last week. When men talk about peace, you can expect war. That's from October 25th. And this reader says, what a thought-provoking brief, an excellent check into our own lives, feelings, and actions. It is easy to become complacent, even in an increasingly destructive society. Indeed, it's the calm before the storm, as another response pointed out. But we can't get complacent. And then finally, this one comes from Missouri. I have been struggling with these very issues internally on a most personal level. There is such division and strife in this world, and I've been feeling quite vexed by it all. Your letter in this trumpet brief shares the godly perspective that is full of the answers to our individual and collective problems that we face in this age of lawlessness. It says here, it's all too easy to get caught up in ourself and blind ourselves to the way of God's love and concern for the true answers of lasting peace and harmonious existence. It says, finally, each of us needs to take extra time pondering this subject. I know I do. Thank you for opening our eyes to what's really going on. That, as I say, coming from St. Louis, Missouri. If you'd like to respond, of course, if you want to respond to our trumpet briefs, you can typically just hit reply on the email. But you can also send an email direct to this this radio program, td@kpcg.fm, and if you do, hopefully we can mention your feedback or quote it here on the air. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.